Mentored by some of the best minds in entrepreneurship in the world, then you're listening to the right podcast, Ditch Digger CEO. We're going to be interviewing CEOs and founders who will be telling their amazing rags-to-riches stories. These entrepreneurs who dominate the industries they serve will be sharing the secrets to their success. We'll be talking to millionaires and billionaires, many who started with nothing. You're going to be mentored with golden nuggets of shared experiences from my guests, whose time is worth thousands and even tens of thousands of dollars per hour. I started in the paving business right out of high school, and with no college education, mentorship has been my education of choice. I started over 25 companies in the last 20 years, have generated over $1.5 billion in revenues. My guarantee is this: if you listen to Ditch Digger CEO and you want to be more successful, you will become more successful. The secrets of my success and for many of the world's greatest business leaders will be revealed. Let Ditch Digger CEO mentor you. Welcome to Ditch Digger CEO today. We've got an amazing guy on board here to talk to listen to, and to understand another great story. Andrew Thoman is family's a friends of mine for years, as they're in the paving business like I am, and as we spread across the country to serve our customers, Thoman became one of our favorite partners to work with to pave parking lots for our customers. So. Long history with Andrew's dad, Jack, and his uncle, Paul, and his cousin, Eric. I think it's cousin Eric, right? Right, Andrew?
Brother.
Oh, it's your brother. Huh? Your brother.
Yeah, my brother. Yeah.
Your big brother, Eric. You know, just a great, great family. And we enjoyed working with you guys. But so welcome on board, Andrew, to Ditch Digger CEO. And we're excited to hear your story and everything you guys have been through. As a young guy that you are, you're part of a long story, right? A long history. Tell us a little bit about that. And you know, we've got, you know, listeners that are paving companies, listeners that are in all different aspects of entrepreneurship. But yours is a great entrepreneurial story.
Sure. Yeah. It started 1925 for us. So my great-great-grandfather, I would be fourth generation ownership. Which, you know, I try not to take for granted. I hear the horror stories of the family dynamics, and you see it happen around you, but I'm very fortunate to be a part of this fourth generation, in my family. But yeah, my great grandfather, came from Alsace-Lorraine, little spot between France and Germany, started, you know, like a lot of people would with, you know, at the time it was almost like landscaping, but setting pavers and things like that for walkways and driveways. And since the company itself has gone through many iterations and name changes and whatnot, but it always maintained the Thoman, you know, ownership, with my grandfather, and to, my father, Jack, and my uncles, and have since now, you know, since 2015, myself and my two brothers have taken full ownership. And my father actually still as an employee, even though he, you know, what he says still goes, you know, is very much involved, which is great because we've got, you know, he's in the 70s now, but he's got 50 years of knowledge that we can tap on, which is kind of an incredible opportunity for us to, as we're you know, taking this through the next decade, and hopefully fifth generation. We've already got some of my my nephews and stuff working for us already, so it's kind of cool to see what, you know, how we kind of came up through it.
I know Eric. What's your other brother's name?
Josh.
I think I met Josh also. Yeah.
He's a couple years older, and there's a bunch of us. There was eight kids, but three three are in the business and running it now. So.
Awesome. Well, yeah, so those kind of the paver, putting paver bricks in, because back then, 1925, the auto industry is just kind of starting to pick up, right? And people are starting to think, hey, this automobile industry, it's going to be around a little while, right? Back then, there it was the internet in the early 19th century. This buggy with the little motor, and that's not going to last. Who the heck would want that over a horse and buggy, right? And kind of like the internet, it's an industry that grew amazingly, right? And so back in 25, what did the roads look like, right? They were pavers, there were dirt roads, there's aggregate, there was liquid asphalt, basically tar and gravel, right? But there wasn't a lot of asphalt paving or concrete paving back then, was there?
No, not at all.
And so, yeah, so they started doing that. And then tell us how it progressed.
So it was, more so once my grandfather, Bernie, had taken over from my grandfather kind of did a lot of like odd job residential, you would sort of classify now. My grandfather really started to expand and go into roads. And he also started to get some larger jobs with some municipalities and bought a tiny asphalt plant in the Buffalo area called Buffalo Asphalt. Started to get a little too, we would say, competitive or larger. And in New York, that time, unions are still very strong. They didn't like that. So he ended up kind of having to reboot a couple times. But then since then, when my father, who was his first employee, so Jack was their first employee, they had just went bankrupt and started over. And again, just started the same way my great-grandfather started. They started doing some residential. And started to build it up again into a more of a commercial business.
What year was that? Here's with the new kind of the new start. What year was that?
That would have been right around 1960s. So my father would have been fresh out of high school, right in that range as sort of the first kind of, employee and just doing odd jobs. And my grandfather was very always just sort of inventive, very hands-on. And so he's always trying to, create things to heat seams and just different stuff like that. And never patented anything, but was always interested in the mechanical ends of, how can we make this look better and the product be better? And, but my father and his brothers, who eventually my uncles came in, that's when it really took off in sort of the commercial direction. They had some more capacity and they're all, a lot of, you're working in the field and, putting out estimates, things like that. And kind of set us up, nicely for, where we are today, set that foundation of sort of a small commercial business. And we've since grown it to much larger.
Well, and what I love about it is, when I met your dad, your uncle, right, your whole family, right, yep. you've got a sense of grit and accomplishment to the American dream through hard work, right, and my friends that I love most are my friends that, built something, worked their butts off, had some tough times, but understood that with hard work and a passion for what you do. You can actually have great success in this country, and again, when you meet your family, you can feel the grit, right? Your dad's still working the field when he wants to or however he wants to, because that's what he loves. And
you can't get him in the office. He wants to be out there.
Yeah, I remember that. And again, we need more of that in this country. We need more people with grit, because tough times are always had somewhere along the line. And to get through those tough times, it's that experience that you've had that have been a little tougher that gives you the grit to get past the next challenge, right? Yeah. And you know, your family is one of those that understands that, and you know, to watch you guys work, your teams work, and the quality that you produce is incredible. So really, really respect that. Tell me, you know, what are the core values that your dad and you and your brothers kind of had, or maybe it's, you know, transformed into a little variation of what you had earlier. Yeah. Tell me about your values. Let's look at core values.
Yeah, absolutely. I attribute those definitely coming directly from my father in terms of having the biggest impact. And there was always, of course, work ethic and hard work was drilled into us at a very young age. I started when I was, that it was necessarily legal, but I was eighth grade summer. I would have been just turned 14 and I was on, you know, the paving crews. So at a very early age, and even before that, you're always around it. You know, whether you were visiting at work or visiting the crews or whatnot, and he would bring us out to jobs and things like that. And felt like our house was always a you know, sort of a job as well, because we would be doing things outside, that because you had equipment you wouldn't normally do, because you're a construction company you wouldn't normally do. So we'd always partake in the stuff at home, and we would, I remember, we got a, I think this is kind of a lot of where it started, but the joke in the family is we had a shipment of bricks that were taken down in one of the jobs. And it was, I mean, piles and piles of bricks that all had mortar on them. And each owner, my uncle and my father's, they wanted to repurpose these and, you know, make driveways or patios out of them. So us, kids, myself, my cousins, we would sit on these piles of bricks. They would give us a penny per brick, and we would hand chip these for hours and hours through the whole summer, just to then take them and lay them for driveways and patios. They look great. But that was kind of that first real introduction to just getting started and working with my cousins and things like that. But and then it just from there, every summer through high school, I was working, you know, 70-hour weeks with all the guys. Like, it was, to me, I didn't know any different. My friends were probably out, you know, playing sports, whatever, and I was working on the crews during the summer. And, you know, but there was something to be taught there. Just, I think, purely, you know, I mentioned the work ethic. I learned that very early on, and I'm grateful for that. I do. Now I'll start to realize, you know, a lot of the getting into the work-life balance, but it was a very good lesson. I think the other thing that he definitely instilled in us was, the respect factor, and just the honesty. I think, you know, if there's one thing I could, you know, especially in construction, you can sometimes feel those bad vibes that, other customers and whatnot kind of feel can, you know, the industry sort of labels it that way. But, that sort of, that we care about what we're doing, you know, we care about how the product turns out. We're not going to do it if we're not doing it right. If we do make a mistake, which we do, we're going to fix it. And so a lot of those things, my dad was a absolute stickler on doing things the right way, or you're going to do it over again. So better, you know.
So just to retract and go and a couple of things there that I heard, right? When you talk about fourth generation, it's not always very, very seldom that do businesses make it that far to fourth generation. Right. And when they do, and I've got a couple of friends that are there that are fourth generation going very strong. But when they do, like you guys, and exactly what you said, right? Even though your family has this business and it's a hard business, it's not easy. You know, your parents knew what it took to get through tough times. They knew what it took to work hard and to make a living and be successful in this business. And they knew that the work ethic they were taught is the reason for their success. And they're intelligent enough to teach you guys that same work ethic, right? Did they have to have you hammering on, you know, brick by brick to get them profit? Absolutely not. Is that something that was prerequisite to be great at what you do today? No, not really, but actually, yes, it was, because you know, understanding what that, what labor is and how hard it is to make a buck, a penny, a brick or whatever. Back then it was probably to kind of big money. If you could do, you know, if you do 100 of those an hour, right? I guess make a buck an hour, that was probably pretty good as a little kid, right? But either way, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that that's what's going to carry you forward to be a success that you're going to be, and your kids also, right? And you're, I'm sure your brothers and sisters, the other four who aren't in the business, still had those lessons, and whatever they do today, they're going to kick butt, outwork people around them, and that's what it takes, in my opinion. More importantly, to make millions of dollars or grow a great business, right, to grow a great family is much more important. God wants us to do that. I'm confident, and to teach work ethic is so important, because that work ethic will get us through some tough times. And if we're passionate about what we do, sometimes we'll work a little too hard. As you mentioned, work-life balance. I look at it as, hey, if you're passionate about what you do and you work a few extra hours, when you come home, if you're passionate and loving to your family and you love being with your family just as much as you love being on that job, or hopefully, you know, more even, right? Your family knows that. So if you're spending two days a week with your family and spend Sunday with your family, they know how much you love them because you're working so hard. So I feel work-life balance is a tough thing to say, what is the right balance? Because there is no right balance, right? But anyway, I'm confident that your work ethic comes from that upbringing, and the success of your whole family will continue because you're teaching that. And when any of your family members, you or your brothers, get away from teaching your kids that, shame on you, man. That's not what you should be doing, right? I believe that it's our responsibility to teach our kids, you know, what tough love is once in a while, and help our parent first and a friend second, right? But so yeah, so that's awesome. And again, knowing your family, meet every family member I met from your family. It's faith and family first, and this business is successful because of that. You know.
Yeah.
So yeah. So work ethic, respect, right? Customer care, right? These are the things I'm hearing. But these are things I've seen your business exhibit consistently. Any other core values you'd look at that you think drive success?
No, I think those are, from there, everything kind of like everything feeds back to that, right? We have, when we're talking to the company or the employees, you know, it's a lot about, you know, the love of construction is important in the sense that, you know, the customers deserve, they're paying for a product, right? So they deserve our respect. They deserve our loyalty and commitment to putting forth the best job that we possibly can. And so, you know, what we've done, I think, like, we could put all the policies in place and procedures in place to kind of help with that. But what's really been important and what's really kind of taken us to the next step is just continually to surround ourselves with the right people. And a lot of those, and again, that's aligning with all the core values that we had or have, or, you know, have grown up with, you know, respect and, you know, our coworkers, our employees, our customers, caring about what you're doing, you know, having a passion for it. When we start to surround ourselves with that, you know, within the company, as we've been growing and trying to figure out how do we manage, you know, that growth and more employees, which ultimately, to as a business owner, you're thinking, okay, more problems and things like that. And a lot of that has been mitigated with just making sure that we are hiring, you know, and adding people in line with what the company stands for, ultimately what we stand for. And that's helped tremendously as we grow.
Why do you guys stay on top of technology? I mean, when I think about, you know, what we do in our business, whether it be in the field or in the office, right? How do you guys stay on top of, you know, the best equipment in the field that's most productive, delivers the best, highest quality, for your customers, right? And then maybe in the office as well. Tell us about that a little bit.
Yeah, the technology has been a tough one, definitely a topic of conversation for us over the last 5 years, I want to say when we started to look into, we had a home built product from my uncle Paul, who's now in the in Raleigh area with Raleigh Paving, and at the time built an incredible, you know, home solution out of the, you know, just custom, but took, you know, he's still building 20 years worth of, you know, inputs and stuff into, and that's what's basically drove, it always gave us a little bit of an edge because it wasn't, you know, necessarily an Excel spreadsheet or pen to paper, right? It was a full on custom estimating software that, and job costing and things like that. So at the time it was very cutting edge, but, you know, has since been antiquated. And now we started 5 years ago to build a new solution, for our business that would take us into the next couple decades. Yes, that has been an absolute challenge and, trial and error and trying to figure out what works. And, you know, what we noticed, I guess, in this space, in this industry, is that the biggest thing we felt was lacking was software, to be honest. A lot of larger market segments, in the sense of like, you know, say a general contractor, right? Ones that are not self-performing the work. There's still, to this day, like a ton of software, very good software, right? Very, user-friendly, mobile, fairly inexpensive, things that you can dial into. And it doesn't necessarily have to be completely custom to you. But every time we would try those scenarios out, they would ultimately fail because we're the specialty contractor that's self-performing, mm-hmm. and not managing, right, just somebody else. So, yep. And especially, I think, in paving, it's just very unique in that sense. Different than say HVAC or electrical or landscaping. Again, it posed all those problems, and nothing out of the box would work for us. We tried multiple different things, spent a lot of money doing it, and we ultimately just decided we're going to die on the sword. We're going to build our own. And if that's going, you know, and it's either going to be the greatest thing we do in life or it's going to be the worst. And, after almost what feels like all 3 years, we launched it, you know, a couple of weeks ago. So, you know, the jury's going to be out as to how everything goes, but it's everything that you would dream of. It's the electronic, you know, timesheets, things coming in, you know, real time from the field, setting up your appropriate cost codes, the estimates feeding all those values, everything kind of works together. And so, you know, without getting into all the details, we're hoping that this is something, you know, it's nothing else that's going to allow us, instead of worrying about, right, how do we input this and enter this, we're now actually taking the data that we're getting and analyzing it and managing it. Like, it's just a big change. We can actually, you know, build insightful, valuable reporting. So it's kind of exciting, right? There's a lot of potential and different things that you can look at now with the software that's going to give us some capability. So,
yeah, I know we've been through a lot of the same stuff, right? So we you know, a lot of the stuff that you use for accounting and let's say payroll doesn't marry that well with estimating and your CRM.
Yep.
Customer relationship management as well as you like, and project management as well as you like. So sure. We've gone through a lot of the same stuff, and I know we didn't build our own. I think our team has helped morph a few together, and I think they've got a solution they think is pretty good that we use across the board for all our companies, but it's probably not as streamlined as what you're talking about. So once you have that built and you proof it as successful, and you say, all right, this is the best, right? You plan on rolling it out to others and making a technology platform, a company that basically a separate entity that serves not just you.
It has always been the plan from the beginning that it was going to be something that we could take and, you know, sort of create that model where it could be rolled out to other companies and sort of that SaaS model that you mentioned. And so I think the one thing I have, you know, and it was kind of talked to me in the beginning that like, look, you think that like, I'm thinking, oh, this can work for any service business, you know, whether it's landscape. If you provide a service to a customer, this software, the fundamentals are the same, right? You want to win work, you want to estimate it efficiently, you want that to then create all your estimated values for your job costs, and you're going to enter actual, all this. Like, I'll be honest, when it, you know, and they're like, well, you got to remember things as you're building it become very custom to you as a company. And so what I found is that this is for a very specific, this is for paving and site contractors in a, we'll call it a commercial space. So it is very specific to the market that I'm in, but it is a very big market. And it is a market that just does not have software that is, you know, adequate for our industry, at least that we've found.
I agree. And again, you know, the software, if it's built right for industry, is going to do well. I want you to follow up with a call with Austin and talk about his experience in building the SaaS product that him and our team have built. That's really doing well. A lot of pain for the first few years.
Yeah.
And a lot of money, way more investment in cash than we thought we would. It would, right? Now it's an amazing product and scaling globally. So it's you know, we're very, very blessed that we went through all the, you know, the tough times with it and today. So either way, I think you and him sharing experiences there could be beneficial to both of you.
Think about
we look at the field, Andrew, you know, in the field. Yeah. I talked to you guys originally when first we were doing business with you years ago, and you know, we were in line and with really dedicating our biggest investments on the highest production, highest quality equipment instead of the what everybody else was using at the time. In many cases, it was better pavers, better milling machines. You know, a lot of people were investing and we were early, and I think you guys were as well. Tell me about that experience as you've grown up in the business, how you guys have looked at that.
Sure. Just like in specific to the equipment that we're using and.
Yeah. Yeah. What I saw in you that I believe is important is, you know, some people just look at the price tag on the job. Hey, it's the same size, it does the same job, and it's 20% less. And maybe in some case that cat piece of equipment that's, again, 20% more, but actually resells 10 years later for 30% more, and it might be 10% more productive on a daily basis to use, right? I mean, tell us about that a little bit, how you guys look at equipment, whether it's pavers or your compaction equipment or milling, whatever.
Yeah. I think we've gone through some definite, I've been involved, actually intimately involved in the buying of our assets from kind of when I started. Always been interested in being efficient with not just what we're buying and, you know, of course we want to keep. So when I took over, everything was we might have a Freightliner, a Kenworth, a Cat, a Bobcat. It was all intermixed. My first goal was to get some consistency there for a lot of different reasons, right? You become more efficient with your service department and buying the same parts and understanding the same complications that you're having. So we started to become a little more brand loyal, right, with... we primarily run Bobcats for our skid steers. They've been workhorses for us. We have this model here. We can never have too many skid steers. Probably have in the 30s. They're just a great, great machine for us. We've had, we started to introduce the Cat skid steer, which has also been equally a really good machine for us, especially when it comes to the milling. And the basically call a mini 4 foot a mill on the skid steer. A lot of our small milling, you know, with that, and of course that, you know, works well with the larger working mills, so the 4 foots, the 7 foots, things like that. which we still as a company subcontract that part of it. But a lot of our trucks, like dump trucks, have been, you know, primarily Freightliner or Kenworth. We've kept pretty specific there. But I think a lot of where I've noticed, and this is, I think, a lot to do too with the just where the economy's headed, and where we maybe had one or two mechanics, and a lot of the stuff would get outsourced, right, to other companies to get the work, get the equipment worked on. So our model was, okay, we're just going to consistently buy new, and hopefully we'll have some of these problems and keep everything updated. But lately, because of just the cost to that, we've gone the other route and invested more in our service department and have grown that to a very top-notch level of mechanics and that can fix anything. And the, you know, the idea is that we buy new or used. Doesn't really make a difference, just depends on what works for us and what the price tag is and things like that. But still, I mean, that idea of always having consistent brands has really helped, right? Streamline the repairs and things that go wrong. But, and our pavers have always been, we've always been loyal to Cat when it comes to the paver. That's been an absolute work for it. It was a Barber Green when we started, kind of, but that, you know, it's been the Cat paver since. So
you guys don't invest in nice pavers like the Weilers or Leboys or
whatever. We've recently invested in the Weiler brand for the smaller. So that would be our, we'll call it our medium, and our path paver, the sort of the 4 foot wide to maybe 8, I think it is. But the Weiler has been an excellent brand for us. So between Cat and Weiler, that's our paver setup. We've got the large, you know, 8 to 16 on the Cat. Those have been amazing. We keep basically, we run 2 crews, but we keep 3 on hand. Always have that ability to, one goes down and cycle them in and out. And our rollers are generally Cat, but we do have some Homs as well. That's been another good brand for us with the rollers.
Okay, so you have 2 crews in the Buffalo market, and then you have 2 crews in the Carolina market too, or what?
Yeah, I mean, we're separate companies. Thoman Asphalt in the Buffalo market. Raleigh Paving is in North Carolina. Service a lot of the Raleigh and all sort of that surrounding area. But in the Buffalo market, yeah, we run 2 large paving crews, 1 we'll call it medium size small paving or, you know, paving crew. So really 3 crews in the Buffalo market, going out performing every day. And a lot of the other, we have 3 site crews. We have a striping crew, a seal coating crew, a concrete crew. So everything exterior, we have basically want to handle ourselves as best we can. We, of course, we subcontract still, but we try to handle everything in house when it comes to the exterior improvements for
so in your market, couple paving crews, one prep crew, couple prep crews, it's, you know, 3 site crews, one striping crew, 1 concrete crew.
Yeah.
And they probably cross train, you know, some of your paving crews. Paving guys go to the prep crews and all that as well, probably too, right?
They will, not as much as we'd like. you got the guys that are comfortable with bouncing around and, you know, trying new things. And you've got ones that are just set in their ways and, they're I'm staying on this crew type thing. And so you get a little bit of both.
And so, how many teammates all together?
Right. We're over 100 peak season. So, which has definitely been new to us and trying to navigate those waters and we want to keep the same, right? We want to keep the quality. We want to keep that small feel. We want to stay involved as owners as best we can. And then, you know, if we add layers underneath us and add people, it's that's definitely been a challenge to keep our commitment to all of that. And
how about Paul's group in Raleigh? How many employees there?
They're probably, if I had to guess without knowing exactly, maybe in the 50 range, I would say.
And how long have they been there? How long ago did they move in?
That was, yeah, they purchased an existing company when we were still together as one here. You know, we were obviously all in Buffalo at the time under Thoman Asphalt, and they bought Raleigh Paving, I want to say 2010.
And they've grown it nicely and all that, like you guys always do.
Yeah, no, they my cousins have since sort of taken over there, just like we have as fourth generation, and my cousin Joe and Dan and Steve, and the three of them are kind of doing what we're doing here. They're they've stayed a little bit smaller, but they're lean and mean. They're a good company. They've done very well.
Awesome. Do you guys market together and stuff?
No, not really. We share ideas, you know, we network together. We've found it to be just very difficult in the sense that like their market is so different than the Buffalo market. And I think that's true for a lot of construction is, you know, your the local markets are very unique in the sense. So we've, I mean, of course the fundamentals are the same. So we talk about those things, just business in general, cool. But the market has been separate.
That's awesome. Now, what trade shows have you guys been going to? Do you guys go to some of these always, or are you on and off on them, or what?
We do. Yeah, we kind of we alternate. We definitely take a year off, you know, or we'll go to the World of Asphalt. We'll go to the Pavement Expo. That one I'll be going to coming up in Nashville this year. I might take a couple years off here and there, but we also always try to every year send a different group of employees. So we've been doing that the last couple of years to just give them a little, you know, time away from work, but at the same time, you know, learning some new things and meet other people in the industry. So,
yeah. And they've fragmented a bit with the conferences, right. With the NPE and what's Payback or whatever, right. They're kind of fragmented a bit. Payment Expo, is that? That's coming up in Nashville.
End of March. That's coming up soon. Yep.
I didn't even know that.
They just went to World of Asphalt. That would have been maybe February, and now the National Pavement Expo is coming up in end of March for Nashville.
What was the one in? I was in Tampa. I thought that's.
I think that was World of Asphalt.
And that's gonna be in Tampa again. I think next year.
I believe so. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. We had some employees go down for that one this year as well. World Baseball. So.
Awesome. When you look at the future, right? The future of Thoman, how long do you want to be leading it? And then what's been kind of the history of handing it off to the next leaders?
I think, well, hopefully so. You know, my father, who obviously very still much involved in his, you know, mid-70s now, you know, I kind of always joke with him, hey, when are you going to kind of, we don't want him to, selfishly, but at the same time, it's like, hey, you know, you deserve to take a little more time. But for him, he's like, if I still enjoy it, I'm going to still do it. So we don't argue with that. Can't fight that. But it's a good motto for it. And truthfully, we still rely on them very much. So it'd be interesting to see. My mindset is like, hey, when I get into closer to my 60s, you know, I'd like to hand it off. And I think maybe we all say that. But if you're still enjoying what you're doing, I can see myself going well past that. Who knows? But we do got a lot of younger generation coming up. We all have a lot of kids. I've got 5 boys, all under 8. My brother, 2 years older than me, has 7. six boys, one girl. My other brother, Eric, who's, you know, another partner, he has six kids. So we've got some, you know, some crews coming up. And hopefully some of them will take some interest and want to do what we did. And, but I think it's different, right? Because they won't start at 14 or 15 or 16. You know, it's just a little different in the sense of when they would start, but, I don't doubt that they'll have perspective and, knowledge that, you know, we could never have dreamed of.
Oh, don't be afraid to start them at 14 and 15. We have to do that. And I think don't listen to what everybody tells you, in my opinion, I think, you know, teaching them work ethic and grit at a young age is important. I disagree with where the country's going, it's almost illegal, right, to start to have a kid working in 14 on a construction crew. But as long as you know you put them in a super safe environment and they understand safety first, I believe it's a great thing, you know. So my opinion, right? My grandkids are going to be working in the field when they're very young, and my kids might fight me a little bit, but I don't think so.
I think that's important. It's important that they understand, you know, especially where, you know, because we're nothing without the ones, you know, actually doing the work. And so that, you know, the value there is important for them to learn, right? They learn that hard work, that work ethic, and they get a respect, you know, a level of respect for coming.
Exactly. They may, you know, my daughter and son-in-law are lawyers. They're entrepreneurs also. They have their own businesses. You know, they don't work with their hands too much except around their house. And I guarantee you, they respect, you know, when they see people working hard around them, they respect them, right? And that's I think important. They know that, you know, their family and the reason they've been able to be afforded a college education are because of hard work, right? And so I think the lesson, no matter what, is important. Now, tell me, when you think about differentiation and you compete in your place, I mean, I kind of get it. I kind of understand why I would use Thoman over anybody else, but tell me your kind of a couple of big differentiators that you think people, not only do you strive to accomplish, but your customers actually reward you for.
Yeah, I think my mind is continually evolving on this because I do, as I've come into the business as an owner, it's been, you know, there's a little scariness to it, but at the same time, it's very exciting to see things from this end and start learning this stuff and seeing what really matters. And truthfully, I think it's what I've come to at this point is not so much the way that we say market or, you know, and all that's important just for our overall brand. But truthfully, I just find it to be the people. I find it to be our, just our, the ones that we, you know, if I can continually surround myself with, people that are better than me, that's my goal. And I think a lot of the other things just sort of take care of themselves, that we would typically gripe about. But, truthfully, what I find you know, we go in and knock out a job, you know, in a week that may take somebody else 2 weeks, but it's just because and it looks great. We're not cutting corners. It's just our guys they care. You know, the employees they really do care, and I think that's what's always set us apart right now and that comes you know, from my dad and you know, hopefully from us now that we can keep that going, but it's really just been the employees are, you know, out there with a passion and just putting out good work in a really efficient manner. And it's allowed us to also to take to grow, right, and take those then reinvest, keep reinvesting in our equipment, reinvesting in better people, reinvesting in software to help with their, you know, give them information that they've never had before, which would be really exciting. And I think that's what they're truthfully have been most excited about the software is that they can actually, there's transparency there. They can see what we see now in terms of like how long something takes, how did we do on this? Just something as simple as an address for a job. you know, being able to go to your phone and get that is, I don't know, the little things, right, that take mm-hmm. away stress.
I gotta tell you, as a partner with you guys, right, I can tell you, to be honest with you, these are things we see. These are very similar to the same values we have and things that we want to keep investing. But when I think of exceptional people, I think of you guys, right? You're like you said, surround yourself with exceptional people, right? And your life gets easier. Your business stays great, right? Also reinvesting in your business. What's that about, right? Just like you said, it's people, it's processes, it's technology, the things you've talked about. Reinvest. I mean, if you don't reinvest in your people and give them the best technology, the best processes to be successful, your customers are going to see it as well as you do yourselves. And then what all translates to, in my opinion, is a passion to serve. I mean, I feel it when I do business with you guys in the past. And I know your customers feel it because it's in your head, right? You have a passion to serve. You surround yourself with people, as you said, are passionate about this business, which isn't always easy to find, right? So those few points, in my opinion, really differentiate. And you think, a lot of people talk about those things, but not everybody delivers on them. So,
yeah, I know they do. They sound, imagine a little cliche. Every business, will say the same thing, but it's when you see it in action, it is pretty amazing of just all the problems and anxiety you feel. And then you add a good foreman, just on one crew, and the ripple effect that has is incredible. Or one good project manager, or one good estimator, it sort of self cleans up a lot of different things. So,
well, what cleans it all up, Andrew, is you guys understanding, but being mentored by great leaders before you, what leadership is, right? Actually doing what you say you're going to do, working as hard as those people around you. You're gonna attract leaders that do the same thing. And when you have a leader on your crew that thinks like you do, you've got a whipped, right? Because that leader in that crew is gonna inspire people around them to work hard, deliver quality, right? To do all the right stuff. So starts from the top always, but it's the top of your organization. It's the top of a crew, right? It's the top of that two-man crew out there, the person leading that two-man striping crew. And how they lead, can they inspire that labor that's got them kind of a lower paying job to be great, right? And it's a challenge that we're always going to have is inspiring each leader on our teams to be great as well and inspire greatness. But you guys do a great job. When you think of to finish this out, when you think of the future and where you're going to go in the next 5 years and 10 years, what type growth do you expect as a leader in this business over the next 5 to 10 years?
I hope so. Right now we've gotten to that, 40 million mark in terms of what we can produce in a year. And I don't, and you kind of try to get a sense of what the market will bear. And, our goal is to start to get over that 50 million mark. But never lose sight of sort of where we came from and that overall just small company feel with our employees. The goal is right now, I mean, we've always looked at different means of getting there, whether it's a different type of work, right, or a different business. But truthfully, we just love construction. So we want to do it in construction. It's what we know. It's what we enjoy. So I think that's important. We've tried other things. We just don't enjoy them that much. So we're fortunate enough that myself and my other two partners, we kind of have our area of expertise when it comes to the business. We spread the risk pretty well. And that just kind of happened. And so each division, when one's having a little bit of a rough time, the other one seems to be picking up. And that's worked well for us each year, depending on what type of work is readily available or profitable. And so we've been able to kind of work with that over the last 10 years. But truthfully, we've kind of just organically have grown. And now we're trying to be a little more deliberate with it, as we've started to introduce some new tools and software, but also as owners, we're learning how to actually do that, right? It's whereas before it's just like, oh, you could get more work. Just go get it. Who cares? You can never have too much. So we're trying to be a little more insightful about it and forecast and figure out, like, that's been a definite exciting thing to learn, but hard at the same time.
So what percentage of your business is new construction? What percentage is maintenance, like, you know, repaving?
Each owner has a very specific. So my oldest brother, Eric, handles new construction, site work, utilities, all that. That's generally, if we're doing 40 million, it's right around a third. And then Josh, other partner, is handling all of the national and local GC work. So anything where we're a sub and we're doing, whether it's a Walmart or a local school for general contractors, we're handling all the GC. Again, that's a third. And then I handle all of the private, local developer. If you're a business owner, you have a parking lot, and that's another third. So it's kind of, and those will fluctuate a little bit each year. Well, one might be up a little bit and the other might be down, but generally speaking, it's all kind of just kind of happened. And so it helps to, you know, where one part of the economy might just be lagging, the other one seems to pick up.
I love the balance of it. And I like that. I like kind of the, you guys get between the three brothers who kind of compete and say, oh, I get this year, right? I'm beating you right now, right? It's kind of, you can kind of have fun with it,
right? There's definitely a little internal jabbing going on for sure. If, you know, one part's pulling the other one along. Yeah.
And the cool thing is really, you know, the balance. And you know, we all want to be diversified in the type of work we do, because as you mentioned, new construction on an annual basis can go up and down. It was a few years of great, you know, great building and development going on in your marketplace, and all of a sudden it drops off. There's nothing, right?
Yeah.
So now there's a little more pressure on the other two sides. Okay, guys, we got to get more work on the maintenance side, on the national maintenance side or the local maintenance side to pick up on the new construction, right? But I like hitting your balance instead of all. I've got plenty of people I know in our business that are 90% new construction, right? And that's a dangerous place to be, as you know. So,
yeah, it just kind of happened.
That's a good. It's a good thing that happened, and you should continue to think about that balance, as it's important. Chris comes in the end here, and I like Chris to ask a few questions if he's got any burning questions, and then it goes over lessons learned through the podcast as well, Andrew.
Yeah. Andrew, this is awesome, man. Really, really enjoying this. So I had to ask ChatGPT to figure this out, but to go to second generation is about a 30% of businesses achieve that. For third generation, it's about 12% of businesses. Yeah. Fourth generation is 3%. Fifth generation is 1%. What is, you know, you guys are three out of 100 businesses make it to where you are. What's the secret? How do you guys do it?
You know, I've thought about this actually recently, and I don't know that I know the secret, other than I've watched the previous generation, which would have been my father, and the third generation go through a lot of what felt like the end, right, for Thome and Asphalt and this business. And but they made some strategic moves, and where they bought another business and it kind of separated, and now the fourth generation was able to come in. But I think that it's just important, and it may be unique, that if you to have it where you get along right with your family, but at the same time, you share a passion, which is most important. We all grew up in construction, and it was all sort of there. We all went to college. We all pursued other things, and we all ended up coming back to the business and felt this, I don't know, this sort of sounds silly, but a calling to see what we can do with it, right? The challenge to, even though it's not like we just inherited it. We did kind of, work up through the ranks. We all worked through high school. We all paid for a high school from our proceeds that we got from, my father never gave us that money. It went into a high school fund and a college fund. And so we were sort of already invested in a sense, right? And I think even though we felt like, oh, I'm not going to go into the family business. I'm not going to, I'm going to do something else. Like that kind of mindset, deep down inside, there was always this draw to come back and say, hey, how can we make this better than what it was before? So that's what really drives me now is that it is cool that it is fourth generation, but I really just look at it as like, how do I make this company better than what it was before? And then furthermore, how can I leave it, right, to whoever the next generation is, the fifth generation, whether it's my kids or somebody else, like, how can I, make it even better for them? It's kind of what really drives me. We always, as a company, we talk about two very important things of like, why do we even exist, right? Why does Thome & Asphalt as a paving company exist? It's not like we're curing cancer. Like we're not, it's not this great service that's happening other than, for me, it just really boils down to we love construction and we want to provide for those that we most care about. And this is what allows us to do that. So if I can provide for my family, if I can provide for employees and they can provide for their family, that is a huge driving force for me is just being able to do something that I love, but at the same time also provide for those that I love. Like it's just kind of a win-win. So.
Hey, Chris, I look at this as it's a legacy of really inspiring your family to understand that their passion for the industry, right? And then, the passion for what is American grit, in my opinion, we're lacking in many ways in our country, but, to inspire your kids to understand that the blessings on this gritty, fun, great blue collar business, you can go to college and be highly educated, but when you educate your kids on the joy of making a difference on a daily basis, like our business, that I don't care. It's an attorney. It still loves the difference we can make in my friends in my business that like ours that are highly educated with PhDs and engineering degrees and everything else. They love the difference you can make on a daily basis in this really fun blue collar business. I feel like that's part of it. But the legacy, I think that you're leaving, your dad's left to you. Your dad's leaving you guys, Jack, and then you guys are going to be leaving your kids. So, the fun you're having and the passion you're having and the love of life you have as you come home every day, just excited about the job you did for your customers and the job you're doing tomorrow. Really cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's awesome. And it seems like, arguably the biggest reason that businesses don't last, two, three, four generations is inter-family conflict, right?
Yeah,
we've all seen Succession. Do you have any recommendations for companies who are hoping to go multi-generational, how to, stamp out those fires before they
sure
the house down, I guess?
I think, because of course, even if it's great if you do all get along and it makes things easy. But I think it comes back to the core values. If you're aligned with your core values, you're aligned, and you're honest with each other, you're not going to agree on the business decisions. In fact, it's better that you don't, because you're constantly then trying to, have that dialogue and figure out the problems, you're going to make mistakes, which we do. And we have our internal arguments all the time on just where do we want to go with the business? Do we want to grow? Do we not want to grow? Do we want to add this business? Do we want to get into this? Truthfully, we have never from the beginning been aligned 100% of the time with all of that. I think it's very difficult, but we are aligned with our core values. We are aligned with how we want to run the business, how we want to be as leaders. We are aligned with that. And those other things will, they'll eventually work themselves out, but they're not deal breakers. They're not, just because we disagree with, not starting a fourth crew or, adding this person or, it doesn't change the fact that, we still respect each other. And, and of course it helps having success, but even, in some of the tough years, which you get, right? You get that turbulence. We've always felt like we are a good business with good people. It will work. It's always felt that way. There will be work next year, right? Construction is unique, especially for us in our market, that you start over every year, which is an incredible thing. You finish in, say, December, you have some couple winter months off, which is nice. But at the same time, then you got to restart that large pendulum wheel and March and April. And but we just always have the feeling that, hey, we're going to do it again. And I don't get a ton of anxiety from that. But yeah, so it's really been the core values, truthfully.
That's awesome. Those are some powerful core values. Yeah, that's good.
Hopefully they stay.
Still going strong after four generations. And you got the fifth generation.
We do already have already started. Yeah. My brother has some of his sons that have been working on the cruise in the summer, some summer help. The fifth generation has already started working in the ranks.
I mean, that might be a big secret there as well. It's like you guys, you kind of get your younger, for lack of a better way to say this, you indoctrinate your younger generation. Like, hey, this is what we do as a family. We enjoy working together. And then,
I think it's more inspiring, though, in my opinion, because you're going to get some of your kids are going to want this bad, and other kids that just don't. And the ones that want it bad, they're going to shake out. And the ones that don't, that respect it, but just think there's something else for them, are going to shake out as well. I've got half of my kids, two of my kids in the business, running businesses, two of them that do their own thing. But yet they're, I just feel like if you can inspire the ones that will be successful, and if you indoctrinate, unfortunately, you won't have success with all those, right? That's my opinion.
Yeah, good clarification. Inspire is a much better word. Yeah, but I mean, it sounds like it really connected with you at a young age, and even though you went out and got a degree in something else, you came back because you're like, no, this is. I feel this in a deep place inside me.
Yeah. Yeah. You naturally want to push away. Maybe that's not everybody, but for me, it was always, I was going for, architecture. I was going into design. So I had a different career path in mind, but, there's just something, that was pulling, that I was always there. I just didn't really realize it until,
I'm not going to be a dictator. That's what you said. I'm going to be a dish digger. I want to do something more. And then you find out that there's a lot more to this dish digger life.
You don't, until you actually get into it, you don't realize how much, fun it actually can be and how challenging. And, but it was something that, I always enjoyed, but the passion really came out once I kind of accepted that.
Yeah, you, Josh, and Eric, I'd love to see you guys sit down with Austin and Janelle sometime because you'd have a lot in common and you got a kick out of each other's stories. And then also the network of people doing similar stuff, sharing experiences is going to be powerful for both of you. What else you got there, Christopher?
Yeah, awesome. I did have one final question for you, Andrew.
Yep.
I know, you know, relationships, referrals, those are a great driver of business. But, you know, we're year 2024. Do you have any fun or exciting marketing or business development strategies that, I mean, obviously, I think your app will be incredible for that. Well,
I hope so. Yeah. You know, I don't know if, you know, it's hard to pinpoint just one thing that has been, you know, our key to success other than really, you know, we talked in length about adding the right people. I think that's incredibly important. We spread out the risk in the sense that we've got some very clear divisions of work that we do. And I think that has helped with our success where our eggs are not all in one basket. I think that's in construction. I could be wrong. That seems to be very important for us or has definitely helped in our success where one division is struggling and the other is picking up. And I think that's been a little unique to us in that we can offer everything, you know, exterior all under one house. And then we've got very clear guidelines to how we manage that, you know, that type of work. And we don't just put it all into one sort of very specialized. We don't just put it all under one scenario. We'll bid this work at a different margin and this one at a different margin. And things just kind of work that way. And truthfully, I think what's important with the software, which I've over the last 3 years of just building it and now releasing it, is that it's there to be a tool. And I know people talk about this, and it's not to replace everything that you've done to get you to this point, but it will definitely, you know, aid in some of those pains you had, you know, trying to track, you know, understanding your inputs and outputs, trying to track things in real time, trying to get some real data points to say, how am I doing? What is making me money? Like now with software, there's just some incredible opportunity there to really go into what we call managing the data as opposed to just inputting the data. Because that's all we did. We just inputted data for the last 80 years, 90 years, and did nothing with it because it was, you needed all this overhead to do it. Now you can keep the overhead where it is and you can afford to actually manage the data you have coming in, analyze it and make it work for you and understand what is actually making you money. That's where we're hoping to go into this next decade is, you know, the idea of working smarter. We're not going to work any less hard. We're going to still work just as hard. We're just hoping to get more out of it. So. I don't know. That's kind of where we come to.
That's awesome. And where can our audience find out more about you and the film?
Sure. I mean, we don't do a ton in terms of like our marketing, but I mean, we have our typical website that we try to keep updating and things like that. But you know, we come up when you search the Buffalo Market. And who knows, hopefully if we can take our software to the next level, maybe there'll be something there as an opportunity for other paving companies and siteware companies in the commercial sector. But, you know, we're at the infancy of that. So.
Well, Andrew, hey, thank you so much for being on today. You know, I love seeing young leaders like yourself, and I know knowing your family is important to me because I know where your leadership comes from, and I love it. Love seeing it, and want to partner with you guys well into the future with my kids' generation with you guys, and continue to move this industry to a better place. Right? I think if great companies stick together and feed off each other, all we do is hopefully serve our customers that much better. serve our families that much better, our teammates better. And in the end, we serve God better. Right? We serve our this faith journey we're on is in my opinion, really way better when we know we're doing what we love doing and we're serving people every day. So thanks for being on, buddy. I really appreciate it.
No, and, absolutely. Privilege is mine. Thank you.
Let's keep in touch. And until next time on Dish Digger CEO, we'll see ya.
Thank you.
If you enjoy this show, please share with anyone else you think will find value here. And please go to our website, ditchdiggerceo.com, for show notes, links, video clips, and more nuggets of entrepreneurial wisdom. Don't forget to follow me on social media at ditchdiggerceo.
Paper routes, mowing lawns, careless hands. Daddy had 6 kids to raise. Not the words you said. Watched his every move and followed his footsteps. Pick and shovel in these two hands.
To the
suit wearing CEO I'll stand. Already had nothing at all. Fearless of losing it all. Ditch Digger CEO.
Children.